bring it on up!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, how are we doing? Another Brock and Salk podcast ready to launch here. Brock, do you like last week's?
Buenos dias, Senor Salk.
Brock was on vacation, people. Yes. Just so you know, in case you couldn't guess. Yeah.
Guess where?
Juarez.
Oh, it was so nice, Senor Salk. So nice.
You have to get tested before you come back? How does that work?
They do. Yeah, they do that
like
right there.
On-site testing in Cabo? Yep.
Oh, yeah, right at the resort. No problem.
Right.
No problem. They also, at the restaurants and the hotels, we got a lot to get to, but help me understand
this.
We
don't have much to get to.
Fancy me this.
Whatever. It's a podcast. We have as long as we want.
Can you just help me understand this one?
Sure.
Because I've not seen this in America, you see it down there, and I can't, every time I just couldn't grasp it. So they have like a bleach tray.
A bleach tray?
Yes, like a tray that's like outside the doors of the restaurants, the hotels, everything else, that you step on the bleach and then a little mat that you like wipe your feet and then you walk in, like on the bottom of your like tennis shoes.
That makes sense. But
for what?
For why?
It sterilizes them.
The bottom of your shoe?
It's like, sir, we've asked you to stop putting your shoe in my mouth, and that's how we've had COVID transmitted all over this resort.
So you don't get foot and mouth disease. Or foot and mouth disease.
There you go.
Right? Okay. Hand, foot, and mouth disease or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. They're taking care of the foot part.
Well, I don't know what's going on in Cabo, man. I mean, that makes sense. You got to be careful of things like that.
Yes.
Actual bleach? I'm sure it wasn't bleach.
It was bleach?
Like Clorox bleach? I'm guessing there's a problem with this story.
Sir, please put your hands in this tray of bleach.
Right.
Oh, okay.
I don't believe that.
It was probably not 100% bleach, but I asked.
Why are you wearing tennis shoes in a resort? Why aren't you wearing flip-flops?
Flip-flops.
But you're not putting your flip-flops in bleach because it's going to go all over your feet. So that
correct.
I call shenanigans on this whole story.
Okay.
There's no way you walked into a restaurant wearing flip-flops like everyone on a resort and stuck your feet in bleach.
1,000% outside every hotel and restaurant was a tray that you put your tennis shoes or sneakers or dress shoes
or sandals or
flip-flops. And it was absolutely some disinfectant, including probably a little bit of bleach. Yes, when I asked.
Fine. So it was the hand sanitizer?
I guess.
Different from bleach.
But it was shoe sole sanitizer, which is inexplicable.
But there's no way you were putting your bare feet in that.
Okay. No, I did not see anybody putting their bare feet, which would actually probably make more sense. Thank you.
But if you had flip-flops, your bare feet are getting gone.
Oh, gosh. It was pretty funny.
It must have been. I hope you were able to relax despite the challenges
around you. I was. Okay, I had a great time. Thought about you boys a lot.
Obviously.
Sent you a few pictures. I saw some of our friends down there and just had a blast.
Everywhere you go, you see somebody who you think reminds you of Groz.
He's always on your mind.
He lives so rent-free in your head.
He does. Brock goes to Mexico. He's like, Mexican Groz. Brock goes to Hawaii. He's like, Hawaiian Groz.
Here's Starkville Groz. There's Gainesville Groz.
Buffalo Groz.
To be fair, he does kind of have that look, right?
How many people do you meet that lead with their bellies like the Sneech Groz? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's one of them every day.
There's a Groz born every day in Brock's world, apparently.
Sure. there was a referee Groz in the state title game the other day. Yeah, that's amazing.
All right. Well, first of all, congratulations to the Huard sisters, Brock's daughters. They've won another state title for Haley.
Haley just stacking rings.
Pretty impressive. Yep. So congratulations to them winning a state title. That is pretty awesome. This week is opening day week.
Can you feel some of the
yes.
You feel some of the energy?
Yes. 100% yes.
Is the bunting out?
I don't know about the bunting. I haven't been over. I haven't seen the bunting yet. We'll see on Thursday. I would imagine there'll be bunting. I mean, it's
lots of bunting.
Yes. People love bunting, especially on opening day. No, it is. It does feel it. Maybe it's the promotion that we're doing on the station this past week for the opening of the gates, right? Allowing one person to actually open the gates to T-Mobile Park and allow people back in. The return of spectator sports to Seattle. Yeah, it feels very real for this week.
And coming off a fairly normal spring, right? Didn't have any stops and starts. Didn't have cancellations. Right. Had a few thousand people in the stands.
Other than
at
these weird, like, seven inning, but maybe we'll go five or maybe nine, depending on how we feel
today.
Stick
around, find out.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, I would agree. The spring went off largely without a hitch. And Mariners, while not escaping completely injury-free, did not suffer, at least so far, any major injuries of spring, right? We got a banged up knee for Kyle Lewis. We'll see whether or not he's ready to go for opening day. If not, it'll be a few days later. It's not like he's going to miss 6 months here, right? Jared Kelnick missed a couple of days, a week or so with his knee, but not a significant issue. And he was back out there playing. So
Paxton stayed healthy. Didn't trip over the ladder or
stayed more than healthy. He looks
like the best player on the team.
Haniger remained healthy, probably as big a deal. Those two.
All of his pieces remain intact, which is great.
Roenis Elias.
He was the only
injury.
Only significant injury of the entire spring training for the Mariners. So, yeah, I would say you're right. It was a really positive experience. And now you get ready to start a season. You had your traditional great story of camp in Taylor Trammell. He's going to be the great story of camp guy this year, right? Made the team by doing it himself.
Did what every manager and every coach that I ever played for, especially professionally, and it was every one of them, said the same thing, and I'm sure Scott said it in one of their meetings via Zoom or otherwise, and that is, do not count numbers, do not look around, do not make the decision in your head, make the decision for us on the field. Go out there and make your play so good that you force the decision, and do not whatsoever count the people around you and worry about them. Do your job.
Yeah.
And he did that.
I mean, most guys can just count the people around them and know whether or not they're going to be on the team or not. He was lucky that left field was the one position where it was like him or Jake Fraley. It's like, well, all right, that other guy's not a real...
Or Jared Kelnick.
Well, we'll get to him in a
moment.
But
thank you, Taylor Trammell, for making this an easy decision.
Pretty easy.
I mean, he was great. Kelnick, you were all right, but injured. And
second base could have been like that.
I think second base?
Yeah, second base.
Well, should long had been there. I mean,
yeah, exactly. You could have had a battle at that spot. Maybe. Certainly in the bullpen, you know, there was a battle. Certainly for the sixth man in the rotation.
We got to get out of the mindset that it's about performance and specifically about results in spring training. I mean, it's not. It's about approach. It's about at bats. It's about the way they're working on things. I mean, if you're just going on spring training results, you're doing your club a disservice. So
correct.
Does Trammell make the team because he hit well? No, I don't think so. Certainly didn't hurt. He makes the team because of his approach, because of the professionalism of the at-bats, because of some of the things he did. And he's really, I mean, you got to watch him play. He's got a really pretty swing.
Yes, he makes the team because he revamped his swing. It looked unrecognizable from what it was in the past. It was loud every single session. It was not just the at-bats in game. It was all the sessions behind the scene. It was the work behind the scene. It is that process, as you talked about. And ultimately, you're not going to keep me down. And I'm going to be the left fielder and compete for that spot and get a spot on the opening day roster, which was obviously, I think, one of the neat stories, too, of how special that was to him.
You know what he got is the Larry Salk seal of approval.
Oh, he did.
From my dad. No. So my dad is in town. They've been vaccinated. So my parents came out to spend a week here with the kids.
Nice.
And they're on the Mariners game. I think it was Friday night's game. And my dad, Taylor Trammell's up. My dad. So now you got to remember, my dad, born Red Sox fan. If you don't play for the Red Sox, you don't play Major League Baseball, according to my dad. It's like
still?
There's 52 guys in Major League Baseball, 26 on the Red Sox, 26 that he kind of knows on the Yankees, and then everyone else in minor leagues.
Like, even as Jane has gotten the Mariner tattoo?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. My dad had to drive me to work this morning, and so I was asking him, like, I was talking to Jared Kelnick today, and he's like, who's that? Oh, jeez. Like, I mean, there's no nothing. Zero. Zip, zilch. Right?
He played for a team in New York once. But
you got to remember.
Now, isn't Mookie Betts out on the West Coast now? Like, where is he? Is he for the Angels?
My dad always does the thing, too, where you'd be like, Mookie Betts will come up. Like, the Dodgers are on TV or something, and he'll be sitting there. It's like, Dodgers, Giants or something. And he'll go, Mookie Betts? Like our Mookie Betts? Yeah, Dad. He left Boston. He didn't die. He didn't fall off the face of the earth. It's not like, you know, Columbus and what they thought was going to happen. Like, you know, he's fine. It's just he's in another city. It's the same guy with the same name. He just doesn't play for your team anymore. But my dad saw Taylor Trammell the other day, and right away he's like, who's this guy? I'm like, it's Taylor Trammell, young rookie. Like, he's probably going to make the team this year. And he's like, oh, yeah, look at his swing. Like, he was just completely blown away by Taylor Trammell. And then a few minutes later, I think he singled in a couple of runs, hit a home run later in that game. It was just like, you can kind of see it with him. You don't have to be a baseball expert. Not that my dad's not
a
baseball expert.
And his swing most resembles.
Well, I mean, my dad these days is mostly watching softball players in their 60s and 70s. So I don't know what
so softball grounds
in Florida. Herb Manley out there. He's...
I don't know if there's like a softball, you know.
How about to your eye? How about of all the different guys and swings you've seen through the years? Is there a Mariner comp of the last 10 or 20 years?
I mean, it's the lefty swing. It's a pretty traditional lefty swing. It doesn't have all the golfing beauty of Griffey's. It's not that. But it's a pretty nice, even, smooth, but not too long lefty swing. Okay. I don't know. There's a lot to like there. I'll see if I can come up with a comp. I don't know that one jumps out to me.
Howdy. But. Howdy's got three. Is it Vincat? Who is it, Howdy?
No, I don't know. I need to study it some more. It's unique. I like it. It's smooth. But, yeah, I don't know if I can give you a comp.
Is it a left-handed Haniger?
You can't compare righties and lefties.
All right, all right, complete, all right.
Hey, watch it, pal.
It's not Haniger, because Haniger looks like he's got his whole foot rolls over every
true.
Time. I mean, that's in its own category of trying to generate torque. So, yeah,
but he's a tremendous athlete too, right? I mean, didn't we ask Shannon this last week or 2 weeks ago? If this is the most athletic team that we will have seen with the Mariners since we've watched him for the last dozen years?
Yeah, the last couple of years we've seen, you know, that's what they said they wanted. They wanted to be hard to play against. They looked at the Astros and how difficult they were and have tried to model some of this after them. So, yeah, Trammell will run around a little bit. You got a bunch of guys on this team who will take off when given the opportunity at first base. And that may help them even more eventually if they do end up with this larger bases or limiting the pickoff move, some of the ideas that are right now in minor league baseball and may find their way to the top. But Kyle's right. The story that of course, begs conversation is Jared Kelnick, who will start in the minors. I will just say flat out, I like this. I am glad Kelnick is starting in the minors, and I am quite frankly, Brock, sick of people pretending they're upset about it for any reason other than that they're impatient and want to see him.
I'm so upset.
For what? Is it because you're impatient?
Because I just want him.
Fine.
I want the whole show. I want the humble pie that he's going to eat. I want the braggadocious. I want the edge. I think I speak for a lot of fans. I just want to see him.
Great.
We have been starved of young superstar talent of this nature since A-Rod. Been 20 years since we've had a prospect like this. Don't give me Brandon Morrow. Don't give me Mike Zunino.
I'm
going to
give you both of those guys. I am absolutely going to give you those guys.
They were absolutely not of the caliber of this player. They were not regarded as one of the three best. They were not the next, you know, Fernando Tatis. They were not the next A-Rod and Griffey. That is the camp and the air that this guy and his rare talent puts him in. I just want to see him. I just want to see him. For better, for worse, for everything else, I just, as a Mariner fan, like, let's go. Okay, so it's going to cost us a few million bucks down the road if he's really
good.
It's not
about that.
It's going to cost you a year down the road.
It could cost you a year down the road, which, by the way, is a huge deal. And the fact that Kevin Mather said it publicly and all of a sudden people pretended to get upset about service time does not mean that you shouldn't continue to manipulate service time. It's what's called doing business the right way and making sure you are doing exactly what Mariners fans want the team to do. Focus on winning for as long as possible, giving yourself as good a chance as you possibly can. Jared Kelnick, my guess is, wants to go to free agency as soon as possible. Regardless of how much he likes it here and how much success he has. If you give him, whatever, 5 years on a Super 2, he'll be a free agent after 5 years. That's what he wants. Not going to sign a deal.
Awesome.
So you owe
it.
Love
that approach.
Great. You can love that about him. Don't you want 6 years instead of five with him? No, Brock doesn't. Brock wants an extra couple of weeks where he gets to be excited about braggadocio.
After 21 years, I ain't worried about
Brock,
6 years from
now.
I'm worried about
years.
Here and now.
That's you can ridiculous. Wait another 40
Do you
days.
Know the story of Orpheus?
Do you remember Colin Cowherd? Do you remember Colin Cowherd when
you're
talking about
Orpheus?
You
Cowherd on me while I go Orpheus and Eurydice on you?
Yes.
All right. Give me Colin Cowherd.
Do you remember? You could probably find it in the system, Howdy. Russell Wilson. He's a star. Why do we got to wait? He's a star.
Arm A.
Arm A. A plus.
Not ideal.
Not ideal.
All right, but
Jared Kelnick, he's a star.
Colin Cowherd, by the way, last week saying, Jake Heaps tweeted this. I know Jake. Jake's, I don't know Colin. I've never spoken to Colin Cowherd. He said, I know Jake. That's fine. What do you mean that's fine? And you don't know Jake.
That's really funny.
Classic Cowherd.
Classic Cowherd. Well, I know him through Brock. Oh, okay. Brock, that is a terrible comp.
Oh, thanks.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Size, not ideal. But as you know, tall quarterbacks have struggled in this league.
God, his voice used to be higher. It's not as high anymore. Maybe Fox is like using some good processing on that mic. His voice is much lower now than it was in 2000.
I am not angry. Brock, I don't think this is a wrong move. All of it. But just as this is the fan in me.
Sure.
This is speaking for the fans out there, not the ones that are trying to put on a front of being angry or anything else. This is just pure fandom, man. It's been a long time.
Yes.
It's been a huge drought. And I just want to see a star, especially one as headstrong as he is, as cocksure of himself as he is, got an edge like he does, is immensely gifted and talented, like a lot of these young stars that we've watched come into the major leagues and other locales over the last few years. He is of that ilk, and I would just love to see him play.
Me too. But if you manage like a fan, or in this case, general manage like a fan, you're going to end up one. I love that you want to see him, and I want to see him too. I'm excited. I watched, if he was coming up, I made sure I was glued to the TV. I can't wait to see Kelnick. And the fact that he is as big a deal prospect as you said, the kind of guy who is going to lead you to the promised land, is exactly, Brock, why he has to be handled the way they believe he needs to be handled. He's the linchpin to the whole thing. He's the key. The most important part of the rebuild, right? And if he needs more time because he missed some time with injury and didn't get it all last year, et cetera, then he needs more time. If he needs to fail in the minors for a little bit instead of in the majors, then he's got to learn to fail a little bit, because guess what? They cannot, in capital letters, cannot mess him up. Can't be done.
Okay.
And for all the reasons you just laid out, that he's not Mike Zunino, that he's not Brandon Morrow, they can't let him go down that path, get rushed to the big leagues because Brock Heward and a bunch of Maple Grove fans want to see him quickly and can't wait a few more weeks. If I'll
his
tell
name
you the
is Stick. His name is Stick Riz. Yeah,
respect, Brock and Stick okay. Riz want to see him. Right. Do you know the story of Orpheus and Eurydice, the old Greek myth?
Do you know
that story?
What do you think?
Probably not. So okay. Orpheus, you may remember, he's a great musician, right, in Greek mythology.
Remember,
you may remember. Well,
yeah.
Orpheus.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Orpheus is the great musician. Anyway, he meets this woman named Eurydice. She dies. She goes to Hades, and he wants to get her back. And because he's so great with his lyre, L-Y-R-E, he takes his musical instrument, the lyre, down to Hades.
Straight down to Georgia.
Goes down to Hades, and he convinces Hades to let her go because he plays so beautifully. Hades says, okay, you can have her. You can take your wife back. But she will be behind you. She will follow you out of Hades.
Into darkness.
But if you turn around and look at her and don't trust me, she's gone. She will disappear. I think she turns to dirt or sand or dust or whatever.
It's very beautiful.
Like dust in the wind. Yes.
Okay.
That's where they wrote that
song.
Sodom
and Gomorrah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like also like the Pillars of Salt.
Okay.
So he's going and he's walking and He agrees to the deal. He sees the light ahead of him, Cerberus and the river Styx, and he's ready to cross over back into the land of the living with his wife behind him when he gets nervous and says, Hades probably double-crossed me. And he turns around right at the last moment, and she's right there, and poof, she's gone.
What?
Dead forever.
Inexplicable.
Yes.
What was the payoff?
For him?
Yeah.
Well, there wasn't. That was the problem. He turned around.
He risked it all for no reward.
Because he didn't have enough trust. Because he was impatient. Because he couldn't wait those final few steps to cross over to the finish line, Brock. He blew the whole thing.
Wow.
Don't do that with Jared Kelnick. He's as important as Eurydice.
He'll be dust in the wind.
You don't want that.
Two things.
Let him bake, Brock. Don't take the turkey out until the little thing pops. He's not ready to pop yet.
Okay. Two things. Do you think Doug was quoting Orpheus when
obviously,
he was yelling at Russell that we'll fall you into darkness?
I think there's a decent chance, yes.
Okay.
Strap yourself up.
That's number one. Number two, I'm going to go back to an oldie but a goodie, and not the 222, none
Thank
of that
God.
Stuff. I'm going to go back to an oldie but a goodie to the Brock and Salk show over a dozen years of our conversations. I'm going to give you three doors. Door number one, door number two, or door number three. You're going to tell me what the leading cause of this decision was. It will help me. And I think it will help other fans out there, other than just patience and everything else. Was this decision, when it boiled down to it, was this door number one financial? Was this door number two psychological? Or was this door number three physical when it comes to Jared Kelenic? Was this a psychological play on Kelenic that you think too highly of yourself? You're too haughty. You're too cocky. And we're going to make sure to let you know that we are in charge.
Was it physical? Hold on. There's plenty of other psychological beyond that.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll take door number two. I think the answer is number two psychological, followed by number one monetary, financial, followed by number three physical.
Okay.
But they're all related together. And I think there's an element of all three of those things. The kid has very few at-bats, even in minor league baseball, above A-ball. Giving him an opportunity to continue to develop physically and make sure he's 100% ready when you bring him up has value. We haven't really seen him fail yet because he hasn't had enough opportunity to do so. It's not like he's crushed double and triple A and you're like, oh, you're holding him back. He hasn't even had an opportunity to go to those levels, Brock, and find out how he does there. There is something to learning how to fail in baseball, because even as good as he is supposed to be, there will be times where he fails. Even Mike Trout has gone through it as good as he is. And you don't want to have him have that happen to him right off the bat in the major leagues in front of everybody, because that would be a concern for the psychological. I don't know that they're necessarily trying to take him down a peg. I think they like the fact that he's cocky and arrogant. I don't think that they're trying to show him who's boss. But I do think that they are trying to ensure that he's mentally ready for what comes his way as a big-time top three prospect, top five prospect, when he hits the major leagues. And I think there's a lot of value to that. I do think there's a financial element to it, which, by the way, is totally fine with me. Mm-hmm. There absolutely should be a financial element to it. That's part of their job, is to make sure Jared Kelenic's on this team as long as possible. And my guess is one of the best ways to do that is to ensure that you play the service time game. Now, I can't say that, but I'm happy to. They should do that. Absolutely. The union can get mad all at once. That's their prerogative.
You take all of those things together, though, and how do you contrast their decision with how they handled Evan White? Because Evan White signed that deal. They put him at first base with zero plan and zero backup because, for some reason, they believe that that's good for his development. That makes no sense. How can you contrast those two things and say it's not 100% motivated?
I guess
by
you
finances?
Would say by they're different kids, and B, he signed the deal.
One's older,
so
one
finances.
Went through college,
and you can afford to let Evan White fail. If Evan White doesn't work, okay.
But if you make him more successful, then you're better
Understood,
off. And last season meant nothing.
You
absolutely nothing.
You can't let this kid fail. It can't happen. If Jared Kelenic doesn't work out, it's such a disaster. It's such a disaster.
Have you read the book, Too Big to Fail? It's pretty much Kelenic.
Yes. You can't let him fail. I mean, Jerry,
one-legged squat 475.
Let's be clear. Jerry's job kind of depends on this kid.
Yeah, so he should get him up faster so that he can perform well and save his job.
Or look the other way around. I haven't even had the opportunity to do it yet. My kid's not even here yet.
How can you judge me?
Can't judge Jerry DePoto until Jared Kelenic's up there. So why would he bring him up? I got a deal this year. What, we haven't even seen Kelenic yet. We saw for half a year. You got to extend this and let's see what happens over the next year. So there's plenty of reasons to keep him down. I will believe that it is mostly, Brock, the true development, psychological, maybe even still some physical, because we got to find out. But mostly psychological, of making sure this kid's fully baked by the time you bring him up to the majors.
And we will see him.
I don't know.
When does he get the extra year?
Yeah, when does the service time clock go up? I'll tell you exactly what day that is, and that'll be the day he's up. Because he needed those extra 35 days in order to make sure his mental was good.
Sounds good. Works for me.
And it definitely was about development at that point.
I'm all in on that point.
Definitely.
Yeah, hey.
That's definitely the number one reason.
Don't mess this kid up. Whatever you do, don't mess him up. Well, and if he goes down there and fails a little bit, that would be great.
Fails a little bit before they start playing?
Yeah.
Well, goes down where?
Huh? To nowhere, yeah, in minor league camp.
And he's not even going down anymore. The alternative site is at T-Mobile
Park. We took these 30 days just to think about it a little bit more, and we decided that, we really should have brought him up, but it's too late now, so let's do it now. By the way, the service clock thing is kicked in now, so But, it, you know, if we could go back and do it again, we'd have brought him right out of spring training.
Good. I hope that's what they do. Again, you know what?
Absolutely. It's about his mental development. Come on.
I think it is. Oh, I absolutely.
No way.
I really do. I
so
do
it's
think
just 30 days of sitting there not doing anything is good enough for his mental development?
Maybe.
He'll be ready for the time he comes up?
I think that
that's
there's absolutely
humble him, Howdy. You got to humble him.
There is 100% a psychological element to this. I buy that.
I believe there's an element to it, but there's no way that's the number one motivating factor in this. He's
so
going to play 35 days
Howdy,
sitting
this is
100% there crossing
financial
his fingers.
Door number one for you, 100%, not
yes,
even a question.
Absolutely. That's the number one ultimate motivating factor. And if Evan White had signed that deal and stayed in the minor leagues, then I would 100% you know, turn tail and say, you know what,
but
this organization does
but
it
differently. They didn't sign Evan White to that deal until they thought he was ready to go to the major league.
I'm not so sure that's true.
They thought
I
he was.
I absolutely don't believe that based on what he did when he got there. He was a disaster
well,
for the majority
I'm
of the season.
I'm not saying they weren't wrong, but that doesn't mean they didn't think
no,
that was the case.
He gave them the gift of signing away his service time, and that's exactly
Kevin
why he
Mather
was in the major league.
Said
leagues.
As much to the Bellevue Rotary Club. We offered Kelnick the contract.
So,
he turned it
feel? How do you feel that a dozen years you've turned these two guys into the cynical old
man? But I was shocked. If you would trade a year of Jared Kelnick at 27 for 40 days of him at 21, you're nuts.
Insane.
That would be the worst decision anyone managing a baseball team could possibly make.
Totally agree.
Insane to do that.
It's completely insane. And it's fine. It's what a fan should want. I want to see Jared Kelnick too. But the idea of making a terrible decision like that over you know impatience, don't be Orpheus with Eurydice. Give yourself the last couple of days, get over the finish line, and when the kid's ready, bring him up, and it's going to be awesome. We're all going to love Jared Kelnick. We're going to love the attitude. We're going to love the what did you call it, Brock? The
machismo.
No, not just the machismo. What was the first one?
Headstrong and cocksure.
No, there was another one you said.
Was there?
No. The machismo.
Hottie.
I don't know what it was. You used a word earlier that's one I don't generally hear, but I was excited about it. So,
good.
Yeah, I'm as pumped for him as anybody else. And in the meantime, look, I'm excited for this year to watch. I don't reasonably expect them to make the playoffs this year. Do you?
No.
And it's just pitching. I just don't think they have the pitching.
Yep.
I like the lineup. I like
yeah,
where
and there's
going.
Still young
still...
guys are gonna grow, and Evan White, and you know it is a big year for J.P. Crawford now.
Yes,
we talk about not looking at results, and it's a good thing that you know spring training results don't matter; they get washed away. Nobody really talks about them because it's been a rough spring for
like 120 or something.
Yes,
he really. Yeah, it was not good.
But big year for you know as we've talked about over the last month, really exciting year for a lot of young guys,
yep.
and there's certainly some intriguing storylines. And Haniger and Paxton and some of your kind of leaders and captain and pros are you know going to have to take a step, and your young people will take a step. And if they do all of that, then most importantly, you will build off of last year, and
yeah.
that is what this season is about. It is about building off last year, not making to me any expectations of some significant jump to the playoffs.
And I think they can do that. I think they can continue to build on last year, and I do think. We'll see Kelnick this year. We may even see Julio Rodriguez by September call-ups time. I don't know. We'll see. He may, depending on the kind of year that he has, et cetera. You know, I think there's some opportunities here to move this thing forward. I won't be pessimistic about it. I just don't think they're pitching, especially their, well, starting pitching and relief pitching. I really don't think either are playoff caliber this year. I like what you've got. Obviously, I like Marco. I like Paxton, as long as he's healthy. And I like Justice Sheffield. He's the one I'm really going to be watching this year, Brock, to see if he can continue to evolve.
Yep.
After that.
Kikuchi, Justin Dunn.
Flexing.
Marmalade.
Marmolejos is not a pitcher, but okay. I mean, like,
Margavicious.
Oh, Margavicious?
Yeah, whatever.
Margavicious. I think we're going with Margavicious.
Yeah, he's a long guy.
And I would have taken, I kind of would have taken him over Dunn, but
no
whatever.
Way.
Oh,
there's
really?
No way. No. Justin Dunn is significantly improved, where Margavicious is exactly who he's always been.
Yeah. And I still think he's better
Come
than
on.
Justin Dunn.
You see, that makes Justin Dunn one of the five worst pitchers in baseball.
Oh,
stop. By that.
No, I don't know about that.
There's
just...
no way that Nick Margavicious is approaching an average major league starter.
Kyle,
no.
Isn't this refreshing?
And I think Justin Dunn is a really good major league starter for like three innings before because what he is a reliever. So let's go throw that kid back in the pen where he's ultimately going to end up. Why wait?
Just
I
do
love
it now.
The Howdy,
Howdy's
Salk
hubris
fighting.
Returns oh, as the spring this. Blossoms and baseball returns. So too does Howdy.
Like the swallows to Capistrano.
Oh, it's just nostalgic.
He hasn't said a word in weeks, but all of a sudden baseball's
like,
back. And
oh, you want to talk to me about a little baseball?
Here comes cocky Howdy. He's been studying the charts and he's ready to go.
Pretty much our Jared Kelnick.
Yeah. So. All right, well, Thursday, opening night, man. Really really pumped to see so where all excited. This goes. I should also say, Brock, this weekend,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know what, you know what it is this weekend? You should
it's
know.
Easter.
There you
yeah,
you
it's Good Friday and Easter. Yes, sir.
You know what that means is going to be on television this weekend?
The Final Four.
The Ten Commandments.
Oh.
Right. Every
that
Easter.
Too. Yeah.
Yes. Every Easter.
Yes.
You know I'm going to be watching.
Sulky well, tradition.
If you haven't figured out what you are doing for Easter yet, here's what I want you to do. Follow your senses, Brock, all the way up the old elevator to the 31st floor. Join Ascend for an exquisite, all-inclusive, progressive, and customizable brunch. You ever eaten a brunch that has all of those things?
No.
Let me tell you again. Exquisite, all-inclusive, progressive, and customizable.
No, never done any of that.
Well, then there you go. This is what you and do it all on Easter. I'm telling you, that's the kind of thing you can do. It's 10 to 4. They're offering a dine-in brunch where you can do it at home. When you hear the menu, maybe this will help you out a little bit. Here's what you got. Ascend is always doing something completely unique. You're able to stay safely seated at your socially distanced table while you choose from revolving trolleys, carousels of bites and beverages. I think that's the progressive part, right? And it's also contemporary. It's a tableside buffet brunch. So you select an entree from the chef and then receive an assortment of family-style dishes for the whole table.
Sounds great.
There's going to be new-style sushi. There's going to be pork belly deviled eggs. Dude, let's just pause the podcast for a moment and talk about how good pork belly deviled eggs sound. I love deviled eggs, and I love pork belly. And if you put those two things together, I'm all in.
Woo!
Lobster ravioli, prime short rib, and ube dumplings. For main dishes, you got Wagyu filet, you got Eggs Benedict, you got crab and Wagyu filet Benedict.
This is the most incredible breakfast I've heard.
Pork belly deviled eggs.
Exactly. Okay. How about salmon Wellington? Look, they got desserts, beverages. Again, go to Ascend Prime. It's this Sunday, big Easter brunch. You can get all the info or even book a table. Go to ascendprime.com. I was thinking about creativity the other day, Brock. What's the last, like, really creative thing that you can remember in sports? Like somebody just like we always hear about creativity in business, right, in life, and trying to think outside the box, an expression that is now as trope as anything else. But like, what are moments that you can think of in sports where you're like, man, that is actual creativity. No one's really thought of that before, and it's cool that they or took something from so long ago and put a new spin on it. Like, do you think that will forever continue in sports, or is there any part of you that is worried that, like, we're running out of creative moments in the sports world?
Well, did you see what happened in Weber, Utah this weekend? Weber State? Were you watching that football game?
No.
When they ran a little quick screen to the receiver, right? To the short side of the field. Okay. Imagine, like, the little X receiver, like a little quick screen you're so used to seeing the lineman then get out in front. The lineman went behind the receiver. He pitched it to the left tackle, who dove into the end zone for a touchdown.
Wow. Awesome.
It's like a hook and ladder screen.
Yes, it was amazing.
I did not see that.
That's so cool.
I'm going to go look at that, though. That sounds awesome.
It was a pretty cool. I know that's a little, like,
no, I like
little
that.
Detail. It's not what you're talking big picture, but it's the little kind of minute scheme detail that I'd never seen ever run before. We've seen linemen, you know, get catches. It was in the red zone. It wasn't like it was at midfield and big boys rumbling for 50 yards. But I think they're about the 8 or 10 yard line, and clearly it was just a play and a wrinkle that I had never seen before.
I like that, though. But I think that's sort of what I'm talking about, is those moments where you sort of like, whoa, that's new. And I can think of a bunch over the course of the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years. You know, the first one, oddly, that jumped to my mind was Hard Knocks. It was just such a great creative idea, and I know that documentaries are not unique, but to get that level of access and to do it that way, I thought took a lot of creativity on whether it's the NFL or HBO's part to put that together, and it's now run its course. Like, I am not excited about the next season of Hard Knocks. I think I'm done, probably, but what will, I guess this is what kind of led me, like, what's going to replace that? What will be the next creative idea that somebody has to kind of walk down that road.
Sure.
And it could be on field, on court also. I mean, like, when the read option and the Wildcat came back to football, what was it now, 10, 15 years ago?
The Dolphins beating the Patriots.
I was watching
out of
that game.
Nowhere.
It was crazy. Yes. The Patriots were one of the best teams in the league.
Brown.
The Dolphins were awful, and they came out and everyone's like, "What is this?
What are they doing?"
And then it became a thing for a little while because there's some merit to it. I get it, but I love stuff like that. And just like, well, that's you found a creative way to win this game. The significant shifts in baseball or openers in baseball a couple of years ago, right? The people came up with some new creative ideas. Those are a little harder because they're so built in numbers that it's difficult to say whether they're creative. Or if they're just like, I don't know, like more gutsy and following what the numbers say. But I hope we still have room for creativity in the sports world.
Here's what I think is happening, and I think you're going to see more of, and maybe more than we ever have before over the next 5 to 10 years, that door or that dam between college football in the NFL, different games, mm-hmm. no interaction, no, sorry, you can't do it that way. You're the little brother. We're the NFL, and you're starting to see, you know, that door opened, and both in philosophy and coaches that are going between the two. You just saw it in college basketball. Juwan Howard, you know, I think sparked some of this. A guy that had never coached college basketball,
sure.
Longtime NBA guy, a player and assistant, and then he gets the Michigan job. Oh my gosh, you know, making the run. Mike Woodson, never been a college basketball coach, played obviously the Indiana, but been a longtime NBA guy. And so I think you're kind of seeing some of that barrier between college and the NFL, college and the NBA. Will you see that, you know, in college baseball to Major League Baseball? Will you see that in high school football to college football? Will you see some of those just barriers of entry mm-hmm. that I think were so much more pronounced years ago and decades ago? I think you will see more and more of those barriers start to dissipate.
I like that idea. I think that's a good one. And it's interesting in basketball, especially where, you know, you think drawing things up on a whiteboard has any importance in basketball? It feels like it is completely irrelevant. Like, there's 12 plays, and if you know how to draw them up, and there's no reason that Juwan Howard wouldn't, because the guy played basketball his entire life, like, what does it mean to be a basketball coach?
Well, what you're seeing today in basketball,
means in other sports.
We don't talk a ton of basketball, right? But what you're seeing is the revolution and the evolution with analytics there too.
Sure.
You shoot threes, you dunk or get lay-ins, and you go to the line. That's it. Alabama, Nate Oates, their coach down there. That's the whole philosophy. You mm-hmm. shoot threes, there's no mid-range jumper, there's none of that. You shoot threes, you attack the rim, and you get to the line. Mm-hmm. That's it. 98% of your shots should be one of those three. Yeah,
I know it's so challenging from a fan perspective. You're just like, oh, I don't want to watch.
Well, it's the same thing in baseball. Pull the ball. That's it.
I know.
Pull it.
And I don't like that either. I mean, I understand it. We've had this conversation a lot, right?
Yes,
we have. Trying to figure out how these analytics have made teams so good at winning that they've really taken a lot of the fun out of. And I guess that's what leads me towards thinking about creativity. It's really a desire to keep as much fun as possible in all of these games. I know that the players are having fun playing and call it like watching the tournament. I'm sorry, the tournament's not as fun as it used to be. I'm not saying it's not fun to watch. It's still fun. It's the college basketball tournament. But it's not, I mean, and I maybe it's just me. I'm certainly open to the idea that I'm just getting old and it doesn't mean as much to me as it did when I was younger. But the games don't feel as fun. Now, they're having fun. Watching Juwan Howard, he's having fun.
Yep.
His players
Gonzaga's having a blast.
They're loving it. I mean, yep. And those are two coaches doing it in entirely different ways with different styles, the whole thing. And both their players seem to love it and seem to be having a blast.
Yep.
But that element of creativity, I don't know, it's just Andy Enfield. He brought that a few years ago, right? At Florida Gulf Coast.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right? What was that? What did they call that
Dunk
whole thing?
City.
Dunk City.
Yep.
That seemed kind of new and fun when it
a lot of fun.
It was like 2013 or so. All of a sudden, Dunk City was. I was like, "Whoa!"
Just throwing up lobs.
Yes, like that was. That's a good example, I guess.
And he's evolved, and he's got his team
right.
playing. And
they're not having fun anymore. Now they're just big and physical and mean and nasty, and they've taken all right. the fun out of it too. But yeah, I find myself at times on the search for creativity. So if you guys have thoughts, you can't like text us anymore, which is too bad because this would have been a fun conversation for you guys to be a part of. But I don't know, drop us a tweet at Brock Heward or at the Mike Salk. We'd love to hear your thoughts on creativity. In the meantime, I found myself thinking about where the Seahawks are at and this idea. I know we talked a little bit about it, but that they were going to take this ridiculous trade from the Bears. Come on. It's been a few weeks, and I still can't get over it. And when I saw the Niners deal the other day, right, they dealt what?
Swapped their third
for the 12th.
For 12th, and then two other first-rounders.
Two future firsts.
They essentially gave up, what, two or three first-rounders?
Two first-round picks and moved back nine spots.
Okay.
Pretty close to what the Seahawks gave up.
But their original trade was three firsts and a third.
In order to get the third best quarterback in this draft, yeah. Right?
Yep.
The third best quarterback in the draft cost them three first round picks and a third round pick.
And he's completely unknown. And he's the third. It's two other teams are going to get their choice of quarterback before they get this guy.
Yes.
They gave up that. The Seahawks were supposed to take less for Russell Wilson? What? What?
Three
what?
First round picks in the 20s?
What world is this where that would have been okay? Oh, but it's cool because there's going to be a player that they're going to cut. Like, what?
Yep.
Fuller and Hicks.
It got me thinking about blackjack and like that moment where you've been in the casino for too long and you're just playing and like you've lost some money. You're like, I'm down to my last 100. Whatever. I'll just put it out there.
Come this far.
Right. I'll just see if this is whatever. It's the last 100. And then, but like, because you forget that those chips represent actual money, right? They have actual value to them because you can take that chip, walk over to the cashier, and they'll hand you a $100 bill for that $100 chip.
You'll get dinner with that.
But when it's sitting there, you're like,
it's
just one plastic chip. I can throw this one out there just as easily as I throw a $5 one or a $25 one out there. And I kudos to the Seahawks for not getting caught up in that mentality. Kudos to John Schneider, Pete Carroll, whoever it is that stopped this train from barreling down the tracks and recognizing that this isn't funny money. This isn't just a chip. Those picks and that these people are actual players with value, et cetera. And Russell Wilson is one of the four or five best players in the NFL. You can't give him up for three lousy first round picks. It's absurd.
Yep. And from San Francisco standpoint, the only thing I would say, kind of back to your creativity conversation, is they are trying to do in a creative way what they've watched some others do in looking at this game and this end game financially and saying, we're going to take this risk because the upside of having a rookie quarterback on his rookie deal for 4+ years is worthy of this risk, is worthy of us feeling just as good, whether it's Zach Wilson or Justin Fields, and we're not going to have a say in it. We've got it to a man. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and everybody in that building has got to look at each other and say, now listen, if we're going to do this and we're going to get the third guy, we've got to be just as happy if it was actually our second guy or if it ends up being the third guy. There cannot be a divided house between Zach Wilson and Justin Fields. You all feel just as equal and
aren't
just
you
as good.
I'm surprised that they wouldn't wait until draft day to make that call. Why do it now?
Well, I think they had to get ahead of Carolina. They had to get ahead of others that would have made that call. I think probably the timing of it was because others that need their quarterback, Mike, that need to have that position. And we know that in this league. I mean, that's a conversation we've had more than any other in 12 years. Mm-hmm. You got your quarterback, you've got a chance. You don't have him, you're in desperation mode. And even look in this division now, obviously, Sean McVay didn't believe Jared Goff was his guy, even though he helped take him to a Super Bowl.
I was thinking about that also. Who was it who signed Joe Flacco this week? The Eagles?
The Eagles.
The Eagles signed Joe Flacco, right? And yes. I just found myself thinking, like, I wonder what the people that are on the get rid of trade Russell bandwagon, when you see the Eagles, a team that was in the Super Bowl just a couple of years ago, and I'm not saying they shouldn't have traded Carson Wentz. They did the right thing. That ship has sailed. I never thought he was the guy. But when you see that they're out there signing Joe Flacco, that's what you do when you don't have a quarterback. You sign guys like Joe Flacco. You sign Andy Dalton.
What did you just say, Kyle?
Hey.
The guy. Hold on a second. You just said when you realize you don't have the guy.
Right.
How many the guys are there?
Well, that's sort of my point. And you have one of them.
Seriously, right now.
You have one of the guys.
How many the guys are there? Three?
I don't know. Well, there's more than that.
There's Mahomes. There's Rodgers. There's Wilson.
Brady. Oh, I think Brady.
You still got Brady. I mean, I think you could throw some guys in there. Like, I think Dak is the guy. Like, I mean, like a guy that can take you to the playoffs and beyond. I think Dak could do that. I think that there's probably, I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
Sean Watson.
Well, that's a sketchy situation at the moment for sure. But in terms of talent and over the last years, yeah, I would put him in that.
There's not more than six or seven the guys.
But it's more than three. I would say it's probably, yes, somewhere in the 6 to 10 range, 6 to 8. But if you don't have that, you're in the carousel. Get on, get off. Maybe this guy, maybe that guy. I'll try this. We'll sign Andy Dalton. Maybe we'll try it with such and such. We'll overpay for Carson Wentz. We can try it again with Phillip Rivers. Oh, maybe we'll try Jacoby Brissett. We'll give Cam Newton a run and see if his arm is okay. I mean,
or
like,
there's, yeah, we think Jimmy Josh Garoppolo. Allen. We think Justin Herbert.
And maybe some of those guys will turn into it. So, I mean, like, it's not like it's a hopeless situation. You can get yourself off that carousel onto dry land. But, gosh, the idea of letting go when you don't have it. You're out there signing Joe Flacco.
Yep.
I don't want to be signing Joe Flacco. I don't want to have to come on the
radio. Oh, they got Jalen Hurts.
Right. Yeah. And I like Jalen Hurts, but I don't want to have to come on the radio here one day or on our podcast, wherever we are, and be like, guys, I'm really excited. Here's what happened in the news today. The Seahawks have signed Joe Flacco, and I really believe this move is because if you put the right pieces around Joe, and if you're, I don't want to say that.
We've been there with Whitehurst Flynn Jackson.
I don't want to do that.
Yep.
I don't want to do that. So thank you to Pete, John, whoever it is who came together and figured out that you can't do this. Put your pride away and go talk this thing out and go get on the same page, because the idea of a divorce is it's impossible to fathom, Brock. It really is.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, three good football questions, Brock, and then we'll play a fan favorite, a little which is better to end this this podcast this week. But let's start here. Question number one, Blue 88. Seahawks have made a couple of moves so far, and we'll talk through a few of these as we go. But what is the next move they need to make here in this offseason?
Corner.
Already got a corner.
Yeah, they got one. They got a Killer Weatherspoon. Nice player. Fits the body type. Comes out of the system. But you need more than that. You've got DJ Reed and Keel Weatherspoon and what? You got a couple nickel guys.
Trey Flowers. Marquise Blair coming back and nickel.
Yep.
Ugo play some corner.
Nope. Ugo's a safety nickel. Trey can't play in this league. He is a starting outside corner.
Jeez. He had a pretty good second half of the year.
Trey cannot be a dependable, get you to the Super Bowl starting corner in this league. So,
asking him right now to be their third corner. Right?
And I don't love that. So I would
behind
love
a guy that was benched by the 49ers.
I would love.
We've watched Reed and Witherspoon.
Reed was good. Witherspoon was the guy that was benched, and Sherman played ahead of him.
Sherman
is a fascinating conversation. Yes, I think at this juncture where the market is so soft for his services, that the tail's probably between his legs a little bit.
He's his own agent. He's on Twitter, lobbying for himself. It's a tough.
Yes. I mentioned, I think, the names, you guys, a month ago or so. Casey Hayward, the corner out of the Chargers guy, has been a little bit banged up, a little bit like Richard, is a guy that plays the ball. I need somebody that can play the ball. This defense has to have that. Shaq wasn't that, so I would never have paid him what Jacksonville ultimately paid him. This defense is at its best in a zone defense. Still, that principle is very much at large. When you have guys that understand the game, understand technique, I think that's why Witherspoon was attractive, because at least he's been in this system, learning it and knowing the details of it. But whether that is a Hayward, whether that is a Sherman, whether that is a veteran guy that can play the football, that to me is next on my
priority list. If I were Pete Carroll, the idea of bringing back Richard Sherman would be awfully enticing. And the biggest reason is it would prove so. I mean, like, to me, that proves that Pete was right. Like, oh, grass isn't so greener, huh? Oh, I guess you missed the kumbaya room.
It'd still be a little vengeance for you, is how you're saying?
No, it's not vengeance. It's proving that his system is better than these guys seem to think after they leave after a long time.
This will be cruel, but bringing him back is bringing in TJ Houshmandzadeh. It's bringing him back so you can cut him before the season starts to say, you know what? I don't forget, and I'm in charge, and I'm letting your poison back in.
Pete's not like that. He's not built like you and me. But I do think that there isn't, I mean, physically or mentally, but I do think that there's that element of like it does validate a lot of Pete's stuff.
When you've watched,
willing to come back.
When you've watched Richard the last couple years with the 49ers, you have to play him a couple different times. You watch him in the playoffs, watch him on big stages. Do you think he can still run enough?
He's not the guy I would want in terms of being the best player in the field, but I do think that there is an element of just sort of proving Pete's value that would come with bringing Richard Sherman back. All right, question number two. We talked a little bit about the Niners, Brock. What are they up to? Where does this lead for them?
Yeah, I think this leads to them making the decision on Jimmy Garoppolo, who's at a number that is still tenable for them. So even when they draft either Zach Wilson or Justin Fields at number three, I've seen Trey Lance mentioned
Mac
as
Jones.
Well. Mac Jones, I know they were at his pro day on Tuesday, and both Lynch and Shanahan were there. So whomever they love in that situation and ultimately lands at number three, I think they can still evaluate it and say, hey, is our team good enough with Jimmy G this year to get back to the Super Bowl as it was 2 years ago? Is Bosa and the rest of the crew and the personnel in place and the offensive line that is back and healthy, Deebo Samuel that's back, whatever else they get in the draft, they're going to have to make that decision. Is Jimmy Garoppolo a guy that can still stand in and be trustworthy enough to get us?
They're going
to
trade him.
You think they'll trade him?
Yes.
Yes.
100% yes. They will trade him.
And you think he's trade worthy?
I don't think he's trade worthy. Or maybe they'll cut him, but I don't. Or they'll bench him. But I mean, like, they're trying to trade him. That's
they're
why they keep talking about how much they like him.
Yeah, I don't. They're trying to trade him. I don't know how
it's
much.
It's like last year, the Cardinals. Oh, Josh Rosen's our guy.
Right.
You know, we're not drafting. We're happy with Josh. We're going to keep him around. No.
What, how do you think this quarterback draft goes? So obviously, Trevor's
number
one. Who goes number two? Is it Fields?
Wilson.
I think it's Fields or Wilson, and I'm kind of torn on those two guys because they're very, very different. With Fields is a bigger, more athletic, more durable, physical.
4.44 40.
Yeah. Yeah, he's yes, but he's
fallen.
Robotic.
It sounds like a lot of people have him like the fifth quarterback.
Fifth. Yeah,
but he's a little bit robotic. I don't think he is a fast processor. He took even a lot of sacks at Ohio State behind one of the best O lines in all of college football, and so there's some problematic stuff there that you have to sift through. Wilson is unbelievable thrower. Is not quite Mahomes as far as arm strength, but not that far off. But he's 213 pounds. He had one brilliant year. He had to fight for his job this year. There was a legitimate QB battle because he had a down sophomore year. So there is enough up and down. Trey Lance, the kid out of North Dakota State, played 16 games, 17 games. Of those, how many are high-quality opponents that you can actually gauge? Can this guy process? Can this guy see the field? Yes, equally like Justin is very physically gifted, but man, there is. And then you got Mac Jones, bad body, average arm, bad athlete, unbelievable processor, super anticipator, and great accuracy. So after Trevor, it is there's a lot of risk associated with a bunch of those guys.
All right, question number three. This question starts with a congratulations. We started off today by congratulating the Hewitt sisters. We should also congratulate their cousin, Sam, Slingin' Sammy Hewitt, the lefty,
Sammy,
who is now the all-time passing leader for the state of Washington high school football.
Yes. Yeah, pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. So he is already enrolled at UW. What should we expect?
It's going to be a competitive spring. He's going to be right in the mix to, I think, win the starting job. Dylan Morris, we saw play how many games last year? Four?
Zero.
Four games? No, they played four
No,
games.
You said saw him.
I did not see him play any games.
Okay. All right. Well,
Howdy and Kyle.
I want to be very clear about something. I did not see him play once.
All four of those games.
Dylan Moore, I watched
Sam
play about 60 games for the
no
Mariners.
No problem beating him out.
Now, Dylan's got some game to him. Dylan was a pretty accomplished guy. Was pretty highly
second
recruited
base
guy.
This year, or do they move him around?
He's accomplished
Moore,
in
Dylan Moore,
high school and Graham
not Dylan
Washington.
Morris.
Yes, Moore. But I think the fascinating part of this and the conversation we're going to have over spring and into the fall and for years to come is we love the little friction between Russell and Pete, an offensive quarterback and a guy that wants to push the envelope and push the ball and everything else, and a defensive minded head coach that philosophically still wants to complete the circle. And in Jimmy Lake, who wore a hat that said run the damn ball, he wants to be in the Pete Carroll mold. and how much is he going to entrust his offense? A very gifted thrower, especially of the deep ball. I would say Sam, and this is not just uncle speak, but as far as a high school kid throwing a football, Salk, I know when you went to spring ball with me and watched the Husky quarterbacks 12 years ago, you were puking in your mouth like they can't complete a pass.
Ronnie Fouch.
Yes, if you watch.
No, it was well, Jake.
Yep.
Locker.
He couldn't throw. And some others.
Yeah, and then it was, wasn't it Keith Price?
I think eventually, yeah.
I think it was Keith Price. Yep. Like, good kid. I mean, can't throw.
Yep.
Short area accuracy.
$1 million smile.
Yeah, great kid.
You know, you'll see, I think, in Sam, his deep ball accuracy and his ability to turn the ball over and do what Russell does on deep balls. There is a legitimate comparison between how Russell Wilson throws his, moon ball that Chris Collinsworth calls it, to throw it up in the rafters, it turns over, the point is down. And Sam's got that ability, and not many college quarterbacks have that. Few NFL guys have that. I don't think I've seen a high school kid ever be able to do it the way that he can, to turn the ball over with his deep ball touch. How much does that come in play? How involved does it get? How much do they push the ball? How aggressive are they going to be? Those are all going to be really fascinating storylines.
Is he going to throw those deep balls too? Didn't all the receivers leave?
And he's got a couple kids that he played and won with, and then 7-on-7 national circuit. Jane McMillan was one of the top receivers on the West Coast 2 years ago.
One of the fastest guys on the West Coast.
Yep, kid out of Vegas last year, true freshman, made some plays. Part of the reason those kids left, especially the older kids, was they knew they were not going to be able to compete with these younger guys.
Puka Nacua
was a loss. That one was absolutely a loss. But he'll have a couple of them. He'll have a couple good tight ends. So have a really good offensive line.
Does he have any running
line.
Backs? That's the question. He's going to be handoff left, handoff right.
You got Sean McGrew. Jimmy what do you Lake? Want? Sean McGrew's going to be there for his seventh year. He's going to be great.
Going to be a fun little conversation
for sure. Is he still around that game?
5'7". I think he's a 27-year-old.
His high school highlight tape was electric. Absolutely electric.
He's so good.
All right, that is today's version of Blue 88. Thank you, Brock. Some good football questions. I'm excited to see Sammy. That will get me to watch. That's for sure. Getting a chance to watch him.
He's pretty maniacal workout guy. He is a pretty driven dude. And yeah, it's going to be a very fascinating year. Lots and lots of storylines. Taking an air raid quarterback and trying to put him into that system, and how all of that works will be, as I said, lots of storylines for us.
All right, let's see. We've got a few minutes still here before we have to go. So, maybe an opportunity to play another Brock and Salk old favorite. Oh. A little Blue 88 right into which is better. Can we do that? All right, Brock, ready? I got summer sports. I got them all over the map. My which is better. You ready?
Yep.
Which is better? And we'll start with sports. Start with something significant over the last week, which we haven't even talked about. Which is better, Hyder and Dunlap or Jaron Reed?
No question. The former. Absolutely no debate about that. And especially, being able to get those guys combined at a number that Jaron was at. You get an inside-outside guy. You had to have Dunlap. He was priority number one for me this entire offseason. We will bash the Luke Jokel move. We will make fun of Eddie Lacy. We will laugh at their mistakes. But you got to give some credit here.
Sure.
Of evaluating the market. All of those conversations about Russell Wilson to all of those teams, whether you were ever going to do a deal, you at least learn some of the market conditions. You gauge that market because you have a relationship, as John does, around this league. And you gauge it appropriately. And you got Dunlap back. And you get in Kerry Hyder, I think, the closest comp to Michael Bennett that you have had since Bennett has left. That's not LJ Collier. That's not Rasheem Green. That was supposed to be Malik McDowell. It's supposed to be a bunch of different people that have been through here, either via draft or otherwise. This guy is a disruptive, five technique, physical, can play inside, can play outside. Helped that San Francisco group with all of the injuries they had to not really miss too much of a beat on their defensive line.
His numbers are all over the map. I mean, like, year to year, the sack numbers come and go. Like, what is it about him that you like?
His physicality and his violence and his short area quickness and his versatility. As I said, kind of like a Michael Bennett, to be able, he's not going to be a dominant edge guy. He's not going to be a dominant, just like Michael Bennett was not necessarily a dominant edge pass rusher. But Michael Bennett was the sum of all parts. When you asked him to do just about everything with a lunch pail on the D-line, could do it. To me, that's what he brings to the table. So to get those two for basically the price of Jaron Reed, sign me up.
So you swap out Shaquille Griffin and Jaron Reed for Akilah Witherspoon and Kerry Hyder. Are they better? Because did this defense get better? Because I don't really see it on paper.
Well, you have to, you know, factor in a Dunlap into that equation.
Yeah, but they had
too.
Dunlap. They kept Dunlap.
Right, you're trying to figure out where they were compared to last year, though.
Yeah, where they had Dunlap, and they still have Dunlap. So they've swapped out Shaq and Reed for Hyder and Witherspoon.
And you're down KJ Wright.
And yeah, we don't know about KJ.
Yeah, we'll see whether KJ comes back. I'm not going to say that Witherspoon is better than Shaq Griffin right now.
I mean,
right?
Shaq Griffin was a Pro Bowl player.
He couldn't earn that trust. Kind of a Pro Bowl player.
Yes. At very least, an above-average corner in the league.
Yeah, above-average corner. But not worthy of, what did he get in Jacksonville? $13 million?
No, you cannot criticize the move and still not think that the team has improved defensively.
Akello Witherspoon was benched by the last team he played, which was not a playoff team. So, that's a major step back. Almost no way you slice it unless somehow they unlock Akello Witherspoon.
Well, DJ Reed was cut by San Francisco. They didn't believe in him, and
those
he became your best corner last year.
Those things are all true. And they could be that Witherspoon ends up being an improvement. I think those are a lot of what-ifs. The question, though, that Kyle asked, I think, is a good one, Brock, which is better as of today, the 2020 Seahawks defense or the 2021 Seahawks defense?
Yeah,
and I think right now, it's difficult to say that 21 looks better than 20.
Agreed. And the work is not done. You also got to add Al Woods into that conversation and Jaron Reed's absence as well.
I'm just going to forget about Al Woods.
Hey,
you guys had a whole season to just be dosing HGH.
Talking about the 14th best rush stopper as far as a defensive tackle in the league last year, according to certain metrics.
Last year, didn't he not play?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. He opted out last year.
He didn't play last year.
That's what Howdy said. He loaded up on HGH.
He just
fresh.
Sat there, just getting
dodged
jacked.
A lot of tests. Very, without
tests.
Ready to go.
He's very fresh. All right. Which is better, Brock? March Madness Thursday to Sunday, or this cockamamie March Madness Saturday to Tuesday?
Or the first one that was Friday to Monday?
Can someone explain why? What's the why here?
It was
why
COVID testing. They were doing testing changes. They were making sure they had distances between games.
Are you sure about that, Howdy?
That's what I had been told.
Are you sure?
On multiple articles that we've read.
That's what I heard from Mark Emmer.
Multiple times.
Okay.
They wanted more testing windows in order to be able to get the teams on the court.
Yeah, give me Thursday to Sunday. Give me Thursday to Sunday. What? And I liked the old way that the women's were not just playing head-to-head.
Agreed.
With the guys, because last night the best game on Monday night was the Baylor UConn women's game, and there was no debate about that. That was the most enjoyable, the most storyline rich, the most controversy coming out of it. Even LeBron James tweeting about the no call. So,
and they shouldn't be competing with each other. That's
I would agree.
Silly.
Yes.
What was the need to make this change?
I think that's what it was. I think it had to be that. I think it was just a situation of getting people with all of the testing and getting it spread out.
It's weird, though,
in their quarantine and bubble.
I don't understand why.
Yeah, I don't get
the same amount of time between games. It's easier to test on a Monday than a Thursday. That doesn't make sense. Sorry, I'm not buying that one. No, it's weird, and it actually would have made more sense without the pandemic stuff, because if people aren't going out on Thursday and Friday nights, then maybe you have a more captive audience with them at home to watch. I don't understand any of it. It's very strange to me. I'm going to say the original is better.
Yes.
Thursday to Sunday. All right, Brock, which is better? David Moore, another guy who departed, or whomever you can bring in as a new wide receiver 3 in free agency.
And there's still some names out there.
I'm saying the field.
Pretty intriguing.
I'm into the field on this one. David Moore is...
I ran its course.
And he's got one specific skill and doesn't seem to have any others.
Yes.
He's pretty good deep cat. Like, run the deep ball, go
tracks
and get it. 50,
tracks the deep ball pretty well. Yep.
But that's really not what third wide receivers do. They play in the slot. They deal in traffic. They are sure-handed. You can run those little screens to, and like they he didn't do any of those things very well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And had ample opportunity, right? I mean, it was not a situation where if he would have just gotten the reps, if he could have just gotten more opportunities, if he had more chances. He had lots and lots of chances over 3 years, and I think you see where his ceiling is. I'd be very surprised, much like Paul Richardson when he left here and got a much bigger deal. I'm not comparing those two and the contracts they got. But when Paul left, I was like, yeah, you kind of saw his ceiling and, nice player, but oh my gosh, Washington's going to pay him what? And David Moore got a nice deal in Carolina, good for him. And I wouldn't have never paid him that if he was going to come back on a minimum deal to try to compete to make this team as the fifth receiver, okay. But I still think there's going to be some better options in the field than are right now, and maybe even in this draft to find QB number 3 or receiver number 3.
Golden? You want Golden back still?
kind of like
they bring back Sherman and Golden Tate.
That would be
like, they're
so
gonna
weird.
Have to trade them.
Percy Harvin's coming back too.
That would be the most Seattle thing ever. The most Seattle move of all time is just to bring back all your old friends and have them hang out here together. Give it a third go around with Marshawn. Why not? Seattle, just bring
everybody. What about Dougie Fresh? Doug, yes. Doug's legs.
He's out there. He's fresh. Absolutely. Why not? Just bring Doug out. He's not mad. All right, which is better, Brock, spring golf or fall golf? So spring golf, when it's wet and mucky because nothing is drained over the course of the last few months, or fall golf, where there are leaves covering everything and anything you hit, even sometimes on the fairway, you can't find because it's buried in the leaves.
Yeah.
Which is better?
I'm going to go fall. I'm going to go late Indian summer, fall into even October. Right? The colors have changed a little bit. Those leaves are falling, but at least, you know, there's still some life out there. Spring is tough in the Northwest.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you, though.
March and April and May are...
Here's why you're wrong. Here's why spring golf is better. Because over the holidays, maybe you've gotten a little present. You've bought yourself something new. New driver, new irons, new putter, whatever the case may be. And you are so excited to take that thing out on the course that spring golf wins because you're just so pumped
speaking,
to get back out there with
speaking
your
from a man that got a new driver.
I did get a new driver and it was awesome using it on Sunday. Yeah. It was fantastic. Thank you.
And I would say this as well. You also watch the Masters, right? You get the majors, you get the Players Championship in the spring, start to get the majors and you can watch, be like, oh, I got to get out there.
Yeah.
Gotta go do it.
Yeah, I think spring golf actually. Plus, yeah, you haven't had a chance to play as much. You're desperate. Maybe you're not in as much trouble at home. You can just sort of go. So, yeah, I'm gonna say spring golf is better there. Which is better, hearing from Pete and John in the offseason or not hearing from Pete and John in the offseason? Easy answer. Hearing from them. I miss Pete and John. I want to know what they're thinking.
Yep. And it has been just total silence.
Silence. Right?
I mean, since the season ended, he's not even been on Pat Kerwin's show, has he?
No.
I did get an email from Jacqueline last time we mentioned Pat Kerwin. He had a guest host filling in that week. I don't think it was Pete.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's been a remarkable restraint.
Yeah.
Especially for Pete, because Pete likes to talk. He likes to be out. It's not uncommon for John to be kept in the bunker and doing all of his work and everything else.
Let John loose. Let's go.
Well, no, they're letting Russell talk. And they're just like, that's we don't even too. Dignify a response. You can just keep yelling into the wind, buddy.
Which is better, the Suez or the Panama?
Right now, it's the Panama.
Well, Suez is now unclogged.
Well,
it's unclogging.
No, thanks to no help of theirs. I mean, it was all just a lunar gravitational pull.
Which do you root for in general?
The Panama.
You root for the Panama?
It's a more direct line to us here in North America.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's close by.
It's impactful to me. Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt's impact.
It's just impactful to me. You know, the things that come through there actually.
Panama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Panama.
I mean, I think they both end up impacting you. It's a global economy, this whole
thing. Yeah. I did
but
look
I'm
at those little
I always
tugs.
Sort of rooted for the Panama as a kid.
Yeah. I looked at those little tugs. I thought of Howdy.
The ones that were steaming across the ocean from, like, Holland trying to get there to help.
Just trying to be a helpmate.
That's right.
Just attached to this massive ship and see if we can just pull away and just tug it away. To no avail.
How about this one, Brock? Which is better, toxic negativity or toxic positivity? I know you guys have given me grief about this before and my concept of people being too positive, but...
my mom has this optimism that drives me nuts.
Hold on. I want to read you something. So you know how when you work at a radio station, you get like a million pitches from PR people every day, right?
Sauce.
Well, one came in that I thought might interest you guys. Toxic positivity, it's called.
She has this optimism thing that tends to drive me nuts.
15 things never to say to a cancer patient.
Oh.
And it's about toxic positivity. There's a woman here. She's available for interviews. Her name is something Hayes.
She's a darkly depressed and sad woman.
No.
She's, no positivity.
She's saying that, you know, there are certain things you don't want to just offer encouraging advice to people who have cancer. You don't want to say at least.
You don't want to encourage cancer.
Well, you don't want to say, well, at least it was this kind or at least it was something like, you don't want to say that.
Right.
At least you don't have XYZ and they caught it early. Since you don't want to say positive. You don't want to say, I know someone who had your cancer and they were okay. Like, you don't want to say that stuff. You're just going to make them more irritated.
Sure,
so
sure.
I'm going to say toxic negativity better than toxic positivity, which is obviously the worst thing out there.
You would.
Whatever makes you sleep at night.
I am saying that.
And how quickly you would diagnose so many with toxic positivity.
There are a lot of people I know who are just a little too positive.
Yep,
and I think we'd like to shut that down.
Take a dose of realism.
They could use that. So you guys aren't Ten Commandments people? You don't watch the Ten Commandments?
Absolutely.
Because I was going to ask you, Moses before, like Charlton Heston, before he sees the burning bush or after? Because he's all cool at the beginning and ripped, but then he sees the bush and his hair goes, his beard goes white.
Mm.
But you don't watch the Ten Commandments ever?
No, I don't watch that. I don't watch any of the trash claymation Christmas baloney. It's awful. Never watch any of the Thanksgiving Charlie Brown.
Don't worry about Kyle and toxic positivity.
Nope,
he's not there at all. No, sir.
Terrible.
Not even close. So, all right.
Hey, Sister Jean's eliminated.
Are you happy
about that? Yeah, c'est la vie.
Did you?
Don't have to worry about her anymore.
Did you throw your Sister Jean elimination party?
There was, you know, we popped some champagne for her dismissal.
Are you assuming she won't be back?
It was a curt dismissal.
You assuming she won't be back next year?
Oh, I hope for her sake that she's back and, you know, maybe eliminated in the first four.
Right.
But
you're not hoping she's
alive.
I want Sister
Jean to see another turtle. Absolutely.
Right. That's nice. That's very kind. Which is better, Pfizer or Moderna? You have a favorite? Are you rooting for one vaccine? Like, when those things come out, do you, like, hope that one company has higher efficacy rates than another?
Oh, yeah, but it's, for me, it's not the big ones. It's the surprise
You're rooting
one.
For the little guy?
Yeah, it's the surprise one that comes through. No, it's the one that's after AstraZeneca, the one that's built
Johnson
on the,
and Johnson.
The Motha stuff.
There's that a one's... fifth one, though. It's not Johnson & Johnson. Yeah. There's another
that
one.
Coming.
And that's what you're rooting
completely
for?
Completely different structurally than all the rest of them. That's the one
they're
one
way you're late. They missed the deadline.
Yeah, they're pulling it off of moth cells.
I take Nexium every day for acid reflux. So I was rooting for AstraZeneca. Like, let's go, AstraZeneca. That's my company. They've solved my problem.
I find myself
rooting for which vaccine company is going to have the most success. So, all right. That's all I got for you, Brock.
That's it.
All I know.
We got to go.
Yeah.
We got to roll.
Well, next week we'll be back, right?
Yep.
Opening day will have happened. We'll be watching Mariners games. We'll have quite a bit to talk about. I'm really looking forward. I'm pretty darn pumped that it's baseball season. We don't get to do our traditional getting psyched for opening day show, but to have it at a normal time, April 1st, with fans in attendance, going to be pretty darn cool this week. So we will catch you all next week, same time. Until then, the hay.
Here's in the barnyard.
See everybody. Dance of the Chopper!